We get the show rolling with one of our absolute favorite guests on the show from Deadspin, the great, the amazing, the wondrous, David Roth, in the midst of a thunderstorm, putting his life in jeopardy to be with us. David, good afternoon.
That's how much I care, Rich. That's how much I care about making quality radio.
that's why we have you here. That's why we love having you on.
Thank you. I don't know if you can hear this. My phone is vibrating like crazy because it's reminding me that there's a flash flood warning. I hope that, I like taking the listeners behind the scenes to watch it all happen, and that's what it's like. I'm indoors, of course. I wouldn't say I'm risking anything except for possibly getting yelled at on Slack.
Well, you look, that would anything that's an obstacle to your happiness, you're risking it for us, and we appreciate it. Speaking of happiness and the world we live in, gosh, David, what's wrong with our country? What's wrong with America when a reality show president can't even trust the reality show contestant he brings into the inner circle of the White House?
I hope that you're talking about Omarosa here, because I'd love to do some Omarosa chat. As you know, I'm a huge fan of her work.
Well, who isn't?
What would you say her work is? This is something I've been trying to figure out. Like, it seems like she's one of those people that, just like, if she hadn't been on The Apprentice, she would have been on The Worst Cooks in America, or it would have been like just some reality show where people like abase themselves so that they can tell someone that they were on E.
Yeah.
Or like Bravo.
I feel like Omarosa is Trump's version of the time when George Costanza took the exterminator out to dinner to show his boss he had a black friend.
Yes, it does. I mean, certainly that is the only excuse for him hiring her. I mean, it's like, I'm not going to pretend that I am intimately familiar with her body of work. Like, I definitely know who she is, and I think that's probably more than enough, more than I would like. But the idea that she's just sort of there in the White House to, like, you know, remind people that, he's not always racist to everyone is kind of it's a cheesy gig, and yet she screwed it up. And, all you can do is tip your cap. Like, it's weird that it's still possible to be surprised by any of this. And yet I really do find myself every day waking up and seeing something that I never thought I'd see.
Oh, yeah. What will it be today? Well, and just so we know that the right doesn't have the monopoly on absurdity, how bizarre is it that people are talking about Michael Avenatti with some level of seriousness as a presidential candidate?
Amazing to me. I mean, it's just, I guess this is the way I've been trying to sort of think about this, because it does seem like we're in the middle of this, like, grifter renaissance, broadly speaking, in the culture, where Avenatti at least has an advanced degree, which is something that I guess you got to give him a little bit of the edge on Rosa and Trump in that regard. But it just seems like everyone, and this is, like, you know, from the top down, the way that Trump has used his office to enrich himself and his beautiful family. And it seems like in this case, everybody has just sort of decided that all rules are suspended, and we're in this kind of like 4-year long version of the purge where only financial crimes are allowed. And everyone's just out there trying to get an extra 15 minutes or an extra $1,500 million. And it is, it's really kind of like harrowing to see. I don't think Avenatti, I have no idea what this guy's actually like. You know, he just seems like someone that wants to be on TV. And yet, like, again, you know, why do adults that, like, have interests in their lives know who all these people are? Like, we have to do it, but it is just, yeah, any moment that I'm spending thinking about Michael Avenatti at a, you know, like, eating fried food at a state fair in Iowa is a moment that I should be spending on something else.
Well, you know, we're all dealing with this as a country, but David, I feel like you may be carrying a greater load than the rest of us because you're so good at writing about the president and everything around him, and yet it seems to bring you great pain to do that, even when you come up with the best description of all a fearless leader, a great wet loaf of a man.
Thank you. I appreciate you saying all that. It's tough. I'm not going to act like, you know, I'm lucky to do it for a job. I'm lucky to be able to write for a job, full stop. But I also feel like with this, it gets to the point, you know, where I write about him every couple of months. You know, it's not my job to write about the president or to goof on the president. It's just like, at some point, that all gets like kind of stuck in the gears and I have to power wash it out or else like nothing's going to work. Like I can't do my baseball blog unless I write 1500 words about what a dope he is every couple of months, which is probably not ideal.
We're talking to David Roth of Deadspin. Well, let's talk a little sports. Let's talk some baseball. Hey, why is baseball a great game? Well, because a kid can hit a walk-off grand slam with two outs in the ninth inning, and because the Mets can rise up and beat the Yankees on any given night.
Yeah, I mean, that one, obviously, you know, you're preaching to the choir on that one. But, yeah, the Mets, I mean, at this point, the Mets are any good thing that happens to them this year feels like a bonus to me because it's just been, we're achieving like this peak Wilpon of, you know, sort of a type of bad ownership that it's like an eclipse or something, you know, like you kind of, you don't want to look directly at it, but you know, it's remarkable and it doesn't happen that often. And it's having my favorite team, but they scored 8 runs in a game that Jacob deGrom started, which is impressive because I think there was a month where they scored 8 runs in the game that Jacob deGrom started. So yeah, you never know. If you're talking about the David Bote walk-off grand slam, then I want to talk about that more because that's one of the coolest things that I have seen, even just as a decontextualized highlight.
Oh, yeah. I did not watch it live, but you watch the highlights half a dozen times anyway because I thought that's the greatest kid in the backyard fantasy of all time, to the point where, you know, we were saying yesterday, if you wrote that in a movie script, people would say, all right, that's a bit too much to be realistic.
That's a bit much. It couldn't be a double. Like, you have to be a grand slam. But yeah, it is. It's amazing. I think it's been something, a very long period of time. I mean, more than 50 years since anyone had hit. I guess somebody on Twitter called it an ultimate walk-off, I think.
Yes, yes.
Which is not like a term, but you know exactly what it means. He was down to 2 strikes. He was down to his last strike and hit a grand slam to win a game in a walk-off fashion. Like, I feel like it could, you know, he could retire tomorrow and probably dine out on that in the greater Chicagoland area for the rest of his days.
Oh, easily, yeah. Let's turn to
He's
football.
In a weird. Well, but go ahead.
No, go ahead. Finish up there.
Oh, I was just going to say that I don't need to turn this into David Boat chat because I didn't know who the guy was until 72 hours ago myself, and I write about baseball. But he is a dude that has been, like, for the last, since they called him up, and they're probably going to have to send him back down once Chris Bryant comes back. He's been hitting like Mike Trout, which is another, you know, file it under you never know thing for baseball. But I mean, he's been fantastic, and he's like a 27-year-old quad A guy.
Your podcast is back this week, and you talk, among other things, about Urban Meyer. And what kind of world is it in big-time college football when Urban Meyer is not the worst guy out there? Thank you, DJ Durkin.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, I can't believe I saw that today. I guess the strength and conditioning coach step down, and that's the only that's the sacrifice that Maryland is trying to make on this, and everybody else is just going to kind of skate on a kid dying during practice and then covering it up for 2 weeks. I don't understand where my colleague Chris Thompson wrote a really good, if somewhat profanely headlined, article that I can't recommend by name here on this broadcast about it over the weekend. But man, what a I mean, beyond it being a terrible tragedy for Jordan McNair and his family, like I just don't understand the priorities that allow that to happen. Let alone, you know, the idea that it's one thing with Urban Meyer, people get crazy about college football and the guy wins a lot of games. Who's DJ Durkin? Like, why is this really worth it? You need it that much?
Well, yeah, and to read some of the other stuff that went on there, primarily with the strength and conditioning coach, but forcing a kid who was overweight to eat candy bars until he threw up, and teammates lifting up players who collapsed during workouts and carrying them to the finish line, and I mean, questioning people's manhood. It's like, you know, it's like the strength and conditioning coach is the great Santini. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it really, really is. It's also just bizarre because I don't think it helps.
Well, no.
Like, I don't believe it doesn't toughen anybody up. It's just sadistic. I mean, it's the sort of thing, if you're trying to get these players in the best possible shape, you know, to win football games, which I guess is, you know, the broadest possible definition of what the guy's job is, you'd think that, like, a baseline there would be not causing them preventable kidney damage out of spite. That's a good place to start.
Well, yes, that I like that a lot. And as I pointed out yesterday, not that it's acceptable anywhere, but, man, it's Maryland. You're not even good.
I know. I was thinking about that today, that joining the Big Ten has just been absolutely institutional poison for both Maryland and Rutgers. Now, I'm sure that there's some sort of financial consideration there that, you know, maybe we don't see in terms of TV money or, you know, I guess the idea is that you get more out-of-state applications and those kids pay more and whatever. I mean, so obviously, once you start thinking about higher education as a business, you're in some deep and kind of cruddy waters to begin with. But man, both of those schools have really just had a miserable go of it and have made all kinds of compromises that haven't moved them at all. It kind of, I'd like to think that there's a lesson to be learned there, but I have followed Rutgers athletics long enough to know that they're not going to learn it.
So what's something positive out there, whether it's in sports, pop culture, something that can bring us a little bit of sunshine in these, well, sort of dark days?
I mean, I've actually found, well, some of it is that I am going to be on vacation in 6 days. So that's what I'm personally using. Not everybody gets to do that. Although everybody that is listening to this presumably is already in Maine, so they already know how that feels, how I will feel in 6 days. But I found, now that I'm kind of cut free from having to watch my baseball team because the Mets are so bad, I've enjoyed, there's been a couple of players that I've been sort of seeking out and trying to enjoy the experience of watching in kind of that liberated way that you can do in the NBA, where you don't have, you know, you can have like a team that you randomly like watching late at night on TNT.
Right.
So Jose Ramirez has been doing it for me.
Oh, yeah.
I've been enjoying that. And I wrote recently about Rick Ankiel getting ready to make a comeback. And I think that's pretty fantastic, too, just because of how unprecedented it would be and because of the fact that he seems really very much at peace. And, you know, he was so electric during the very brief period when he was a major league pitcher. I think even though he's going to be, you know, 40 next year, and who knows if he ever makes it back or if he ever gets the strike zone back, but I think it would be cool to get the chance to see him, you know, do something that he was kind of cheated out of doing by the fluky cruelty of baseball. So oh, yeah. That's a nice thing to think
about. It was a great story. Now, I know it annoys much of America, but we're enjoying this historic Red Sox season up here.
I think, you know, I mean, it's not that annoying to, if you live in New York and they come to town and beat the pants off the Yankees a bunch of games in a row. Like, it's, you know, sometimes it's just fun to watch guys with bad facial hair look sad on the train. You know, like, I don't have a rooting interest there. So it's nice. They are awfully good. And it's always cool to see a team sort of working at that level. The thing that struck me about it is that, you know, as good as they are, they also haven't been, you know, unusually healthy. I mean, they've had some terrible luck with Devers being out and stuff like that. A lot of the pitchers have been, and, you know, with Sale more recently, you know, not all of their pitchers have been great. Like, it's just, like, this isn't as good as they could conceivably be, which is really something to think about. Because they're on pace, I think, right now for 113 or 114 wins.
Oh, yeah, and they're a really likable team, too. But, you know, New England being what New England is, the vast majority of people I talk to are like, yeah, but I don't know if they can win the World Series.
Yeah.
Win 113 games, and then if they go out in the second round, it's like, what an awful disappointment this was.
I know. That's the magic of it. I mean, that's part of, like, I think why I was surprised the other day to see what their winning pace was, because I know they're good, you know, and I have enough fantasy teams that I have, like, you know, some vested interest in, like, four or five guys on the roster. But the tone of the conversation on there is, it's not, you know, fatalistic or whatever, but everybody should be just, you know, doing the Snoopy happy dance all the time. And all the stuff I see is being like, Pomerantz is a disgrace. We got to do something about him. And, like, I don't know how you could be watching a team that wins, like, basically, you know, four out of every five games for a month and be worried about Drew Pomeranz. Like, you have to have a lot of good things going in your life if that's going to be a problem for you.
Puritan guilt. We can't shake it ever here.
Yeah, that's a good answer.
David Roth of Deadspin with us. David, always great talking with you. Have a wonderful time when you're up here in our state. Enjoy your vacation.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me, as always. Have a good one.
You bet. We'll catch you soon. It's David Roth with us on Downtown.